what happened with me is when I was in my 20s, I fantasized about being an author. I fantasized about writing a book and being famous and being respected and being in literary circles and so on. And I did nothing for decades. And then one day an agent came to me and said, you know, you made so many success. You have been so successful with audio programs. Why don't you turn a couple of them into audio books and I can get you a contract? And so she did, and I did. And then I didn't publish another book for years. And then finally I realized that if I wanted to get publicity, and this was my motivation, I had to have a book, because with a book, they would interview you on radio and television and do interviews in the newspaper. Today, by the way, there's a complete review of my latest book in Investor's Business Daily, which goes to 185,000 people.
Wow.
Which would never happen without a book. And so therefore, I thought, well, the way I would get publicity for my speaking and other things was I would write a book. So I wrote a book, and then they told me, well, they'll only publicize you if you have published the book within 90 days. So you have a window, 90 days before and 90 days after, and after that, the window closes. And this was back in 1979, 1980, when this started. They were publishing 200,000 books a year. Last year, they published 2 million in the U.S. alone, 70% of which are self-published, and only 1% of which ever gets to bookstores in the airport. Only about 5 or 10% ever even get to the bookstores. It's the most amazing darn thing. So anyway, I started writing a book. I said, well, then I'll write another book. So I wrote a book, and I began writing a book every 90 days. And I began that about 10, 12 years ago. I now have 52 books on the market.
Wow.
And so I teach people. There's a system to writing a book, just like making a cake or a souffle or preparing a dish in the kitchen. There's a recipe. And that if you write a book, it can change your whole life. Change you from the beginning, it can change your whole life. So how did you write a book, Brendan?
Well, I wish I was as smart about it as you did it, because and that's why I've always learned from you so much, is because you went at it with a business mind and went at it with, hey, this can get publicity and build the business and build the brand and get my message out there. And I think everyone needs to hear that, because a lot of authors run into this without a business mind to it. And that's what I did, honestly, Brian. When I began, I was just this kid with a story. I just wanted to tell this story about how we all have second chances in life.
Yeah.
And I began directly from the message part. I was the bleeding heart writer, you know. I just wanted to share, hey, you know, at the end of our lives, we're all going to ask if I lived and if I loved and if I mattered. And so I wrote a parable, you know, a little story about this guy going through this journey in this amusement park and learning about his life through different characters at this sort of mythical amusement park that helped him find his second chance. And so that book was Life's Golden Ticket, and I wrote it, and I was so naive. I didn't know about the business. I didn't know about thinking about it as a business. I thought I understood it, but I really didn't until I did. And I know we'll share some of our insights about what will make a book really go, but I came from a perspective, I just wanted to share this message with the world and get it out there as far as I could, mostly just for the message. I didn't think at the time of, wow, that can also loop back to me in terms of, you know, profit and in terms of building a real brand and helping me get the message out there even further. And I think that's the, you know, takeaway one on this call already is approach this with that business mindset to think about how do you turn that publicity and that attention from a book that comes in into a real brand and business, because you did it, and you're still here, and you're still at the top because you keep releasing the books, and I think that's just genius.
Well, you know, it's interesting what you just said, is you had a message, and for those of you who are listening, the starting point of writing, I remember this beautiful one-liner, Brendan, it said, a writer is a person who cannot not write.
Mm.
They have something in them, and they cannot not write it. And that's why there are many writers who write for many years before they make it, before a book takes off. But they cannot not write. And I read a very interesting book that was given to me by a business friend, by a writer. And in the book it said, when do you start writing your second book? And the answer is the day after you finish your first book.
That's so great.
Yeah, and because there, if you're a writer, then you cannot not write. And so there's a whole lot of things. People say, I want to write a book. Well, do you really want to write a book? And that's really the great question. You had a message. Your first book was a message. Now, to tell us a little bit about your second book. because that became a bestseller.
Yeah, yeah. The second book was, that first book was just straight up mission and purpose. The second one was understanding that branding and being able to bring it in. So the second book was called The Millionaire Messenger. And yes. I wrote that book from the time I came up with the idea for the book.
Okay.
Literally came up with the idea, then wrote it, then got it self sort of mid-tier published, and then also put it out there and hit number one on the New York Times. It was only 11 weeks, the whole process. Because finally I realized a couple things. One, I realized if you're going to write a book, you've got to block time to do it, just like any other activity. And
yeah.
So I blocked off 3 weeks, and I did nothing else. I mean, I didn't do – and all I did every single day was write and eat and work out and write and eat and work out and sleep. That was just it. That was like every single day to write. I blocked the time. And people always say, well, I'm going to write a half hour here and then a half hour there and a half hour there. And I don't know any serious writer who does that.
No.
And – you know, people who say, by the way, I'm sure we have people here, Brian, who say, well, I'm not a writer. And I say, well, no. Look, what we've discovered is they did this great study across multiple industries to see how much people were actually writing in their daily lives. And if you combine all the email and the text messages and the Twitters and the Facebook and everything that we do now in terms of actual writing, every single person across multiple industries in the United States, writes a book, a 250-page book-length book, writes a book every 4 weeks.
Wow.
In terms of just if you just compiled their emails, just the amount of the character count, the word count, every American is already writing a book every month. But
wow.
They don't consider themselves a writer. But no, you already have the facility. You already have the mindset. You already have the skill to write. You just haven't aimed it yet to a specific message. And that's what I did with The Millionaire Messenger. I said, okay, I'm already writing. I'm just going to take these 3 weeks, and that's all I'm going to do is I'm going to aim it, and I'm going to write this message. And what I did is I did something. I know you teach this even better than I did it. Is I just said, okay, if I'm going to teach people 10 things about this topic, what would those 10 things be? And each of those 10 things became a chapter.
Yes.
And that became the whole book. So each chapter I didn't look as, does this whole book flow intelligently and are there these cool loops running like you get to do as, you know, a great writer in fiction. This was just like, okay, there's 10 things related to this topic I want to teach. Each of those 10 things becomes a chapter. And most people get intimidated by this. And I discovered that a chapter is actually only about, 4 to 6 pages in Word. And in your word processor, just 4 to 6 pages, that's a whole chapter.
Yep.
So I just tried to write 4 to 6 pages, and that became a chapter, and I wrote another one, did that 10 times, and suddenly I had a book.
Well, let me jump in here, because 82% of adults dream of writing a book someday, and only a tiny percent do. And the primary reason is that they don't know how to start. One of the things that I teach, and I teach a very simple system on how to write a book and get published that is quite remarkable. People take this system after struggling for years, and within 3 months, they've got a finished book. In fact, I just got off the phone with a client of mine in Finland, and one of the richest men in Finland is a friend of mine. And I met him many years ago, and he was running a small business, and he brought me over to speak several times. But I recognized at that time how smart he was, and he got into a high-tech business and took it public and made $50 million. He's very successful. So
wow.
I was talking to my new client about him, and we agreed the guy is quite remarkable. But here's an interesting thing. He was struggling to write a book for 3 years, and I told him before I went over there, I said, I can show you how to write a book very quickly. And he said, I would really appreciate that because I simply can't get at it. So I went over there, and we went for a long walk, and I explained to him, this is how you write your book. Within 3 months, his book was finished and published. It became a bestseller in Finland. It made him one of the top personalities in the country. It led to business opportunities and senior executive positions and investment capital that have made him one of the richest people in Europe today. But he said it was absolutely astonishing. After struggling for 3 years and one conversation with me, he got everything he needed. He's a very quick study, as you can imagine. Got everything he needed to write a book. So this is what I told him, which is really simple. I said, first of all, you get a concept for the book. What is the book about? What is the objective of the book? What is your message? And you can do this in a simple sentence. For example, I write a book called The Art of Closing Sales. The object is to teach people how to set up the conversation and ask for the order at the end of the sales conversation. That's the objective of the book. It can be 200 pages, but that's the objective. So that becomes the umbrella. And then I say, you do a down dump. And this is probably what you did. If people do this directly or indirectly. And a down dump is, I use long form yellow pads, is I write down, okay, what are all the ideas or thoughts that could go in this book? And I just begin writing. And this sometimes takes me 3 or 4 hours. It's one of the hardest parts. There's 3 or 4 really hard parts in writing. But I just start writing them down. If I was going to write a fiction book, and we're really not talking about fiction, then I would do the same thing. What would be all the characters, and what would be the plot development and so on? But in nonfiction, I just write and write and write. And I don't try to categorize it. I say, well, I could include this and I could include that. I taught need structure, and people have needs and wants, and what's the difference between wants and needs and desires, and what are the motivators and the main motivators, and what do people want more of and less of? And I just keep thinking all of these things, and how could you position your product or service so that it satisfies the basic need that a person wants and will cause them to take action? Just write it down, every single thought I can think. Now, here's the most amazing thing, and everybody listening to this, is you are far more intelligent than you know.
It's so true.
Because when you start to write, it's almost like an ice jam on a river at the end of the winter. It starts to crack and it breaks, and then the whole river starts pouring. As you start to write, your mental log jam breaks, and you're astonished at how much stuff you write. You had no idea. You had so many good ideas until you begin the process. And so I'll end up with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pages, long form, just notes. And I'll think of quotes, and I'll think of statistics, and I'll think of research, and I'll think of other places that I read something where I could go back to and check, and I'll make a note, go onto Google or Wikipedia for this and so on. And I'll just write and 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 write. And then I say, all right, now, how would we break this down into chapters? I call this the initial down dump, by the way. And that's my philosophy, is the down dump, is you dump everything onto paper. And then I say, well, now, what would the chapters be if you're going to divide it into logical sections? And I always pick 7, 12, or 21 chapters. I've got one or two books with 10, but those started off as 12-chapter books, but the publisher said it was too big, so it had to be reduced to 10 chapters because I wrote so much. Anyway, so 7 is a cosmic number, 12 is a cosmic number, and 21 is a great number. So I have a whole series of books that are either 7 chapters, 12 chapters, or 21. And that forces me to think, all right, if I was going to have 7 chapters, what would be the titles, or 12 chapters? And I'll write down the titles, and sometimes I'll write down, like I just finished a book that's coming out in June. It's called The American Spirit. And I wanted to write 21 qualities of Americans that make them exceptional. Americans are patriotic. Americans are responsible. Americans are generous. Americans are pragmatic. Americans are entrepreneurial. Americans are honest. In other words, the 21 most prevalent characteristics of Americans. And I came out with about 40 qualities, but I had to reduce them down to 21. So I combined them and recombined them. And then I started to write down everything under patriotism that I know, and everything under integrity that I know, everything under entrepreneurship that I know. And so I did a down dump under each title. First of all, the major down dump, then the down dump under each title, and now you've got your material. And that's what I did, and now it starts to fall together. Stuff that you thought would go in chapter 3 will actually go in 1. Stuff from chapter 2 you put in chapter 7, and it all starts to form, almost like a Polaroid photograph would start to form when you take a picture, and the picture starts to emerge from the chemicals. So that's how I did it. It sounds like very similar to what you did.
Yeah, and I do it. It's like I love what you said at the beginning too, of having an objective for the book, because I also know, as I'm writing specifically like a business book, I know that the reader, the end reader, has an objective too. And so I say, what is their objective? And what is my reader, what is it they're trying to accomplish? And what would the 10 steps be to accomplish that? And then I kind of write it out so that they feel like, because I think there's two ways to really structure a book. There's the progression approach, or there's the practices approach.
Okay.
And the progression approach says, hey, you know, we're going to begin you from point A, and we're going to take you all the way to point B in a very logical, step-by-step, linear, progressive approach. So it's kind of like you have step ones, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. And so you can decide, okay, is my book going to proceed in crescendo to an outcome for them so that they can be able to do something, know something, have something at the end? Or there's the practices structure, which is really just, it can be 10 things, 10 chapters that none of them necessarily actually, they're all related by a common theme, but they don't have to build on each other. Like, you don't have to know, I don't actually have to know chapter 5 to know chapter 10 because they're different topics.
Right, they're not sequential, like links in a chain.
Exactly. And so that's a big decision at the outset of writing a book, is asking, okay, is this going to be sequential, or as I use the term, progressionary? Am I going to progress through this? And I think what's happening right now is more and more authors, and this is intelligent, is that they're saying, let's not do progressive or sequential books, and here's why. Because now they can take that, if each chapter can stand alone, I mean, obviously, have a common theme to make the book, you know, walk through with the common feeling. But if we can actually make each chapter stand alone, then each of those chapters becomes an unbelievably great blog post, or it becomes an ebook in itself, or it becomes, you know, a great audio piece, or each of those pieces now can be, you know, dissected up and used in different formats and repurposed. And in thinking that way, I think that's a smart move for a lot of new nonfiction writers, especially in business, where we have a day and age in which, you know, there's no reason a singular chapter in a book should only ever live in that book. That now we can grab that book and use that as a blog post to promote the book. Give that chapter to a major blogger and say, hey, why don't you just post this whole chapter? Because now it becomes in itself something that promotes the book.
Well, that is a great idea. Two quick things, and we're sort of brainstorming. My friend Tony Alessandra wrote a really good book on communication. It was 10 chapters. It was $29.95, and he's a first-rate person and talks about different personality styles. But the book was not selling that well, and it was a big book. It was like 350-400 pages. So he took and he looked at it, and he realized that each chapter was on a particular part of communicating. Communicating between men and women, communicating between bosses and employees, communicating throughout your day. So what he did is he took the chapters out, just as you said, as separate chapters, non-sequential, and he published them as white papers for $9.95 each. And he sold vastly more white papers on separate subjects, because people, rather than buying 400 pages on communications, they bought 40 pages, 39 pages, on how to communicate better with my girlfriend. Or something else, and he made much more money charging for the chapters than charging for the book. Just exactly what you said. As long as you make the chapter, it would have a beginning, middle, and end. It's complete. It doesn't say, you know, and you'll in the next chapter you'll learn about this. You just don't link the chapters together.
Yeah, you don't need to. And if it can stand alone, you know, especially right now. I mean, we're experiencing a huge tidal shift in the way the authors not only promote but also publish their work. And, you know, there's kids around the country right now who are posting, you know, 20, 30-page fiction on iTunes for sale for 99 cents.
Yes.
And selling 400,000 of them.
Yes.
Now, that's, like, unheard of. I'm doing a big – I mean, people are wondering about the future – I'm going with my new book, which is through traditional publishers, through Simon & Schuster Free Press. And, you know, they've put a multi-million-dollar advance down for this book. It's the best thing I've ever written. And, by the way, thank you, Brian, because I got to sit out with you. I think we were in San Diego for your total business mastery program. And we got to sit down and talk about books, and it was a good time because I needed some inspiration, and you did that, so thank you. And this next book, so as it's coming out, I'm not only going to start promoting the book, but I'm going to create an entire ecosystem around the book of little mini books that relate to that topic that I'm going to release out on iTunes and other like Kindle formats. They're just short things that inevitably end up leading to the big book sale too. And those little short things, I have no question, are going to make me as much money as the traditional book will in terms of sales over the long term. Because with a major publisher, and you know, we all know this as authors, with the major publisher, you're getting, you know, 15% royalty. So you're taking home anywhere from $1 to $3 a book. And that $1 to $3, well, on iTunes, I can sell it, you know, as you say, a white paper or an ebook for anywhere from 99 cents all the way up to, you know, whatever I want to sell it for.
Right.
And let's say I do what these, I mean, I'm blown away by the number of stories in the media right now of people, you know, literally teenage girls releasing fiction on iTunes and or Kindle and selling hundreds of thousands of them.
Yeah.
And if you build it as a brand in the business and you take that same strategy, now that girl's just a teenager in Minnesota, releases something and it catches on, and she doesn't have a back end. She doesn't have the real business to it. But if you do it with the intention, as we talked about at the beginning of this call, where you have that intention, now all of those hundreds of thousands of people, now they're going to be dropped into a funnel where you add value to them over a period of time through newsletters or videos. And then you offer a new product for sale. Maybe it's your audio, your DVD, or your webinar, or your seminar. And you have that all in mind and all planned and all ready. And that's there. Then when that book hits, or those little ebooks hit, that generates real business and sales and revenue for you. And suddenly you've got a business, you've got a brand, and you've got money.
Yes. Well, the tsunami, I just read this statistic, you know, Apple... The gross national product of Apple is greater than the country of Poland with 55 million people, the highest valued company in the world. They released the iBook in 2010. They expect to hit 100 million in sales by the end of 2012.
Mm.
Basically, a three-year period, 100 million in sales. And what has happened in the last 6 months, as you know, Brendan, is a tsunami of ebook publishing. The market has shifted so dramatically because of the incredible success of the iPad, plus, of course, the Nook and some of the others. But what's happening is people who buy iPads tend to be readers. I mean, how can you use a computer or an iPad if you don't read? So the first thing they do is they think, well, I'll buy a couple of books, and there's all kinds of deals that you can get. So I must have 30 books. I have enough books to read and read and read for probably 200 or 300 hours. But every time someone says, have you read this book? I said, no, I just go pip, 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 instant purchase, and it's downloaded to my iPad, my Kindle, and to my iPhone. And so it's changing the dynamics completely. Before, you had to go through a long, laborious process of courting the publishers and the publishers courting you. Now you can go straight to ebook. And then there's many other provisions with regard to that we can talk to. Because everybody thinks, oh, I'll just write an ebook. Hold on, big guy. I've read two or three books on writing ebooks. It's a very simple process. I took a seminar from an expert at the same conference that you and I were at, where you spoke so well, and she showed how you can publish an ebook 40 minutes from the time you turn on your computer. If you have the book ready, it takes 40 minutes before the book is actually in the marketplace. And she just walked us through it in this workshop. Well, here's the checkpoints, here's the bullet points, here's what you do, pip, 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 40 minutes. She published her first book in 40 minutes. So that's how easy it is once you have all your ducks in a row. But then I read something, I've done a whole lot of research on this before you jump in, but there's a whole lot of other things, is if you don't have a cover. So she was talking about creating just a print cover, a title page with your name on it. Well, that's immediately discounted and rejected by most book buyers. If it doesn't have a cover, then it's obviously not a serious book. It's not waste. It's not the cost of the book of $99 or $2.99 or something else. It's the time it takes to read it. So people say, well, I wouldn't even buy it. So you have to have a good cover. And then you have to have the internal guts laid out in such a way that it transfers into the e-book format smoothly, or it actually gets kicked back by Amazon or by iTunes or by someone else. So anyway, there's a lot more to it than just what they say.
Agreed. And I think that brings up so many important things of, you know, before you slap something up there, you really have to think through the titling and the messaging and the look and the feel. I'm just finishing the process. My book comes out in a couple months from here now. And I, you know, for our title, we went through probably 40 different ideas for that. For the artwork, for the cover.
Yeah.
You know, I went through about 30 different covers before I submitted the one I liked to the publisher, who kicked back 3 or 4 different kinds, which inspired me to create 20 more different versions of it before it got in and finalized. I mean, all of the speed and the technology that comes now with what's available to us in terms of the tools online and the ability to share our message still have to be tempered with intelligence and strategy.
Yeah, well,
and
don't keep us in suspense, Brendan. What's the title of this upcoming book?
Oh, the title is called The Charge, Activating the 10 Human Drives That Make You Feel Alive.
Wow.
And the whole premise is, what are the human drives within us that we can activate that actually make us feel alive today? You know, it's taking a new look sort of at Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs that
right. In
today's abundant cultures, no one does what they need anymore. We're all doing what we want because we have a greater abundance of choice.
Yes.
And now, as we know, and even in marketing, is the more choice you have, the more confusion and the less action people tend to actually take.
Yes.
And so what is it that actually inspires us and makes us feel engaged and energized and productive and fulfilled today? And how do we activate those parts of our lives that make us feel those way? And what we've learned from neuroscience and positive psychology and high performance studies is that it's very different today than it was just 50 years ago, because there's been a tidal shift in our approach to intrinsic and extrinsic rewards. That what inspires us today, if you want, in brief, if you really want an inspired life today, you've got to be really strategic and intelligent about managing novelty in your life, about managing challenge in your life, about managing creative expression in your life, and managing contribution. And those four things have a very specific thing that they set off in our brains that we can actually now look at in neuroscience, from the dopamine molecule that's released that kind of makes us light up the reward centers of our brain, to actually how much satiated we feel after an activity. And so novelty, challenge, creative expression, and contribution are sort of the heart of the book, and teaching people to activate those in just some simple ways in their life that they will feel alive again, and they can help people around them feel alive too.
Wonderful. Now let's delve into this just for a second. So here you have a reader, and let's talk about a nonfiction reader. My approach is much simpler than most people. I'm not a complicated person. So I if you remember the movie, the Charles Dickens movie about Oliver Twist. Oliver Twist. He was called the boy who asked for more. It's a great big scene in the movie where he goes in the poor. He's in the poorhouse with all the other little boys, and he goes. He's got a little bowl of porridge, and he goes and he said, "Sir, may I have more?" And he says, "More," and the master says, "More," and all the kids say, "More." Everyone says more. No one ever asks for more. Well, my philosophy is that the great motivator for much of human behavior is more. People want more. So therefore, a person wants to read a nonfiction book. Why? It's because they want more. And that brings us to what you've often talked about. The promise is people buy a nonfiction book because you make a promise to them with the title and the subtitle and the advertising that if they buy and read this book and apply what you teach them, they will get more. Not only that, they'll get more of whatever it is that they want. They'll get more faster than if they invested the same amount of time, effort, money in learning something different. So you're always competing. Is your more is greater than their more? If you look at your Experts Academy, the whole motivation of people to attend Experts Academy is that they want to get more out of their expertise than they're getting today. And you promise to show them how. So coming back to that, with regard to your motivators, the activating the 10 human drives, what would you think would be a motivator, one or more motivators that would cause people to buy a book written by one of our listeners on this teleconference?
That's great. One, that's great coaching. Thank you. That's smart. You know, I think we all want, you know, I think the book ultimately gives people more of what we all want, which is more life in our lives. And if I break that down, because we all want a sense of more vibrancy and engagement and energy out of our life. We want a psychology that is buoyed up by enthusiasm and by real engagement with what we're doing and with what our life is about. We all want to be more engaged and enthusiastic about life. So what do we have to do that? And that's what I would say the book is about.
Well, I have to tell you something really interesting. I had every so often, I got a call out of the blue from someone I haven't seen for 20 or 25 years, and he said, why don't we get together for breakfast? And I said, sure. And he's an older gentleman who works as a company and CEO coach. And we started talking, and he was talking to me about the difference between Freud and Adler, which you would think is not really a great breakfast conversation. But he said that Freud, who is the founder of modern psychology, was absolutely convinced that everything the person is or does or becomes is determined by what happened to them in the past. And Adler broke away from Freud after 20 years of working with him, broke away because he said he was convinced that virtually everything that a person does or becomes or is because of their potential future. And so that leads us to Maslow, cognitive psychology, Glasser, and all of these other psychologists who talked about the fact that human beings are driven by their potential future. And the greater clarity, which is what I've been teaching forever in goals and things like that, the greater clarity you have about an exciting potential future for yourself, the easier it is for you to take positive, progressive, constructive action toward making that future a reality. And so this whole thing of future orientation is something I just really adamant about. It sounds like exactly what you're saying here is that what motivates people is their future, is the potential future.
Yeah, you think about that. I mean, that's the root of enthusiasm. It's impossible to be enthusiastic about life or business or anything unless you can see a future that excites you. I think that that's what you've done so well in helping people. I mean, that's why the number one thing when anyone teaches leadership, the number one thing they always talk about is a vision for the future, a clear vision for the future that engages people and excites people so they can have enthusiasm to approach their work.
Well, then and that brings us back to our authors who are writing here. Then we have to ask, if you could encapsulate the promise of a better future that the reader of your book will have, that becomes the central thread that runs through the book. And if that's your promise, there's a wonderful description of branding, Brandon. It says, branding consists of the promises you make and the promises you keep.
That's great.
And so a book that is well-received is a book where the writer makes a promise in the title and the subtitle and then keeps the promise. And so if a person wants to write a book, there's another thing that I teach people, because many books, this is just my opinion, many books are a form of psychological catharsis.
Right.
They start off and they continue throughout the whole book about how my life sucked and my life and how terrible my life was and how terrible, and then finally I overcame it. A friend of mine once said that great speaking has three parts. It starts off with me as a screw-up, revelation, life after the revelation, which is really interesting, because your talk is the same thing. Here's what I was. I went through the car crash. Here's what I was afterwards. So it's a very simple formula. Before, less than optimal results, revelation or traumatic moment or turning point in your life. When I teach speaking, I teach people to identify the critical turning points. Is everybody in life has turning points where something happens, and they say, "No, I haven't had any turning points." I say, "Well, let's go back. every single person is astonished to find that they had a turning point. And the turning point could be very simple. Someone turned to them and said something, and they walked away, and they were never the same. Or they read a quote, or they read a story, or they heard a story, or they attended a talk, and after that, they were different. So mm-hmm. that's the turning point. So it's the before, the transitional moment, the turning point, and then the after. So what many people do when they write a book, and I don't mean to beat this up, is they go the before, my life screwed up, and then the whole book is about how their life was a screw up. And every so often they'll come up and say, I learned this. Well, here's what the point. My point is, it's not about you. If you're writing a nonfiction book, it's not about you. And I get manuscripts 5 or 6 a week where people say, could you, you know, critique my manuscript or write me a testimonial? Well, I'll glance over it. But if it's just about me, and oh, me, and what a life I had, nobody wants to read a book about the tragedies of your life. This is not a psychological catharsis. So if a person listening to this wants to write a book, you can use your story as a springboard. It's like running down a diving board and, boom, hitting the end of the diving board. Now it's about them. You just basically say, here's how I got here. I screwed up. Then I learned this. And let me tell you what I learned and what I did with it. So then it's all you, and how you can get more by using this or myself as a lesson. That's how you teach it.
Yeah, I love all that. That's really, I didn't even think we'd talk about that, but that's really great about story development, about, you know, these revelations and these transitions. And I always love to say, you know, that in the great works of our time, because I'm kind of a fictionary weirdo, I love great books, like you mentioned Oliver Twist. I'm like, oh, God, I love it when people are well-read, and I think we need more people who are well-read. So I hope that when they download all the 40 books on iPad, they actually read a few of them. But,
right.
but you know, I think, you know, we always teach that there's 4 things in story development that makes it really pop. And that it's exactly what you're talking about, that there's this transition point that in the writing itself, that there's a major transition in not only the plot line, but there's a major transition in the tone of the book.
Right.
That at the beginning, there's always these 4 elements of any, you know, struggle. It's the old thing of from struggle to success. And in the middle, there's revelation. But what I drilled down as we started looking at story development, and I was talking with a bunch of screenwriters. We've had about almost 100 submissions from screenwriters around the world who want to turn Life's Golden Ticket into a movie. And in that process, I've learned how screenwriters think and how they go through things. And the 4 elements that I pulled out of it, if this is helpful for people as sort of a framework in story development, is at the beginning of the story, which, as we said, you know, is always sort of struggle and conflict and resolved in success.
Right.
And a new world. But at the beginning, there's always 4 elements to these characters. That the character is always embroiled in a world of chaos. And there's a element, so the first element is chaos. The second element is the character feels stifled in life. That they don't feel that they're being allowed to be themselves or having the opportunities they need. The third thing is that the character feels alone. They feel detached or secluded in some way, or not a part of. Their element of social belonging psychologically is
right.
Stifled itself. And then the fourth element is they're often scared or driven by fear. And then something from those 4 points, a new introduction in the plot comes. An external thing that creates crisis and challenge to rise above.
Right.
And usually the character doesn't want that. But now the mountain has been in place in front of them. They must climb. And then on the other side of that, as that most of the book or most of the great stories of our time, it's the emphasis and the majority of the story is that climb,
right.
That ascendance over chaos and stifling and being alone and being fearful. And then where they end up on the other side is from chaos to clarity and order, and from feeling stifled to having freedom. Freedom is a huge element of all great literary technique. Then from being alone to feeling connected, and then from being scared to feeling confident and enthusiastic for their world now.
Huh.
And if you take those framework and we say, okay, on one side of our story, and this can be a great speech, right? Any great communication is you're telling great story development. You've got to, okay, tell me where the chaos is. Show me where someone's stifled. Show me where someone's alone. Show me where someone's scared. And then take me on a journey so that that person now gets to celebrate because now there's clarity and freedom and connection and confidence. And that's what makes a story, not just a story that engages people, that's the greatest stories of time as we look back in literary circles of what we loved. And that's very simple elements to introduce to any great speech or any great book that makes it better.
Yes. Now we have to come back. We have to come back to how to write a book and get published. And,
yes.
And the various channels. So the way that we write a book, just to summarize, is you've got to come up with what they call is the high concept. What is your high concept? What they will ask you when you submit a book proposal or even a query letter. Your query letter has to start with a high concept. I'll give you a very, very simple high concept that was worth about $100 million. It was called Bomb on a Bus. And that led to that movie with Dennis Weaver, Sandra Bullock,
Speed. You're right. Yes.
Speed. Led to the book Speed. So the concept, the high concept that got the green light for a multi-million dollar movie, which sold $150 million overseas, which took Sandra Bullock from being largely unknown to great success, Keanu Reeves, and so on, was Bomb on a Bus. And then, of course, a few years later, they had that the book was Snakes on a Plane.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, what is your high concept for your book?
And remember, I love that, because I never thought about it. Like Pretty Woman, one of the most successful movies, that was basically Hooker in High Society.
Yeah, that's right. Hooker in High Society. Hooker gets into it. It was very well done. So if you can't write your high concept on the back of a business card, then you don't know what it is. Many books, and again, I get them every single day. Many books, they're full of ideas, but I say it's like a drunk lurching from lamppost to lamppost. It goes idea after idea. Many of the ideas are borrowed. And then many of them are run through the filter of my own tragic life. Woe is me, woe is me. Look how I managed to overcome things. The author keeps thinking it's about me, that people are really interested in me. People want me to talk about me. No, people are interested 99% of the time in one human being, themselves. Talk about them. In all my books, by the way, and I give this, all my books I always write you. In all my speeches, I write all my speeches and seminars, 2, 3, 4 days. I just agreed to do several seminars in India, in Ukraine, Russia, all over Europe. Every seminar I give, I talk about you.
Mm.
And then if ever I use a negative example, I will always say there are people out there who don't do these things. There are people out there who are not aware. I'll always refer to people who are not present. You, the people who are present, you're the winners. You know these things. I'll even say that. You know these things, but let me go over them just to remind you. And so I'll always treat the people I'm talking to as if they are winners who want to do better. I call it winner copy, like in advertising copy, as opposed to loser copy. You know, you the funniest darn thing, you know, you read, they say, does your life suck? Are you down in the ditch? Are you depressed? Do you feel that you're going nowhere? You're missing the boat of life. You're in despair, then read this book, you poor, sorry son of a gun, and maybe you'll be able to pull yourself out of the ditch of life. I call that loser copy. But here's the challenge.
Yeah.
People who have that fit that description will never reach out for your book. It's people who are doing well who want to do better. I always say this. I've preached this for 25 years. Write at people who are doing well and want to do better. I always start off. When I start off my seminars, I'll say, you've heard me say this, I'll say, thank you very much for being here. The very fact of your presence means that you're in the top 10% of adults living today. And let me explain to you why. Statistically, only 10% of people ever come to a seminar or a meeting like this. The other 80 or 90% have always got a reason not to be here, but you're here which means that whether you knew it consciously or unconsciously, you're in the top 10% or you intend to be. Is that correct? And everybody says, yes. That's my opening statement.
That's brilliant.
I've got them for the whole 3 days.
Wow.
So I'm talking to them. You guys are winners. You are already top people, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart because they're there. So it's for those of us who are thinking, those who are readers who are thinking of writing a book, whatever your past experience is, remember you're writing to people who are doing well and want to do better. Speak to them with great respect and warmth. Talk to them of how smart they are and how they can be even smarter. I even say you may be doing this today, but by doing a little bit more of that, you can be even more effective. It's always more. Mm-hmm. It's not your life sucks and here's how to stop it from sucking. It's here's how you could be even better than you are today.
Brilliant. Huge messaging. I mean, it just changed the whole tone and feel of a work, of a book. I know one of the things we talked about was making sure we shared some of our best ideas of promoting books.
Yes.
Now you've got the book, How Do You Get It Out There? And all the books you keep selling, all these bestsellers you keep having, I'm curious, how do you do it? What's your approach to promoting these?
Well, fortunately, of course, we work with you. You work with us. We have 250,000 unique subscribers, so we promote it extensively on our website. And now, because of the inexpensiveness of video, you can actually shoot internet acceptable videos with your camera and your iPhone. What you do is you can do little parts, vignettes, little stories, and send them out to everybody that you know. Put them on YouTube. But remember, it's not buy my book. It's something. It's a message of great value to people. That, by the way, comes from my book. So if you want more, you can actually tweet as well. And the best way to tweet is with a really powerful statement, 144 characters, is that you can earn more money faster and easier than you ever thought possible if you do just three things. Number one, this. Number two, this. Number three, that. And for more, get the full article. Something like that. Is your tweet has to contain within it value. It's almost like, I say it's like heavy hors d'oeuvres at a reception. It's not potato chips, but it's really good quality, rich protein, mental protein. And then
nice.
Offer them more if they come and get free chapters. And another thing, next thing you do is offer your first chapter free. So come here, download the first chapter free. If you like the first chapter, you know, Frank Kern's made a fortune by saying, here's my 21-chapter book, here's the first chapter, it's free. Once you finish it, come back and get chapter two. That's free as well. And he does this five or six times, and finally people say, the heck with this, I want the whole damn book. And they buy the whole book.
Right.
I'm not going to wait one chapter a week, I want it all now. I want more now. So the internet is really the key to promoting. My book that came out last year was called No Excuses, The Power of Self-Discipline. And they bypass the entire traditional book-selling route. No radio, no television, no newspapers. They just simply put notices and reviews on all the internet net sites that are read by people who buy books. And the book sold 100,000 copies. And you never saw it promoted anywhere. But if you're a reader, you would be on those sites. They got it onto Oprah. It was reviewed on the Oprah site, which is read by 1 million unique subscribers. And the book moved in every bookstore. It's in the airport bookstores, which is one of the highest accolades in the world. And then it moves, of course, as an e-book, and it went into multiple languages. And it was 100% promoted online.
Brilliant. Yeah, and what I hope people hear is you didn't say, and this is what it used to be, but you didn't, and you've been through it and you've done it, but you didn't have to say PR. You didn't have to say, oh, God, I've got to get on the, you know. Your first strategy was offering value online to people. It wasn't get on a major television show. And I think that's important. Not that nothing is wrong with major television shows, but they don't convert the way people think they do. And the world of viralocity really lives online.
Yeah, and there's 186 channels out there, and nobody's watching them anymore. Do you know that television watching has dropped, just like newspaper watching, magazine reading, or newspaper reading? They've dropped.
I'm sure.
People are online.
Yeah, they're online. And if they're watching television, it's because they're going boop, 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 and watching the show they wanted to watch.
Yep.
And
I just started using Hulu. Do you use Hulu?
I do. I love it.
It's unbelievable. $9.95 a month. You can have every single program that's ever been produced within a couple of seconds with almost no advertising at your convenience. Holy smokes.
it's incredible. And, you know, I have friends who actually just last month, I had a friend who was on Today Show, and I said, well, how many books did it move? And, you know, 2 weeks later, he was able to look at his numbers, and he'd moved probably from an appearance on Today Show about 900 books.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And you know what you
have
to do?
And I thought, wow.
You know what you have to do to be on Today? You have to fly to New York. You have to stay overnight at a hotel that costs several hundred dollars. You have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and be transported to the studio. You're going to be on from 7:15 to 7:21 maximum. You have to be there at 6 to be made up. You sit around for your 6 minutes. You get on. The person's never read the book. They say, well, big smile, charming smile. Tell us a little bit about what's in your book. And you say, well, in my book, blank, your time's up. And that's it. You're back
right
on the street. You're walking around. There's nobody. The streets are empty of New York at 20. You're walking around. And now you have to fly all the way home, and you sold 900 books, and you already had an advance, and you make a buck and a half a book if you're lucky. So basically, it's those. I used to do all that. I used to do cross country and radio, television, book tours, go from city to city, and everything else. I used to even do book signings. That's where you go to bookstores and you sit there, and you have to first of all give about a 30-minute talk about what's in your book, and maybe if it's well publicized, maybe 10 or 15 people show up. And then you sit down behind the desk, and they go and buy your book, and you sign it personally, and you smile at them with a big smile. It's taking you an hour to get there. It's taking you half an hour to speak. It takes you about another hour and a half to talk to people, and they sell 10 books. And you make $1.50 each, and you already got it in the advance. And you go home at 11 o'clock. You got there by 7 or 8. You go home at 11 o'clock. You sold 10 books. And your publicist says, boy, that was successful. Let's do more of these. I spoke to a major publisher. They said, will you help the book with book signings? I said, I don't do book signings. They said, well, if you don't do book signings, we won't publish your book. I said, well, then you could pound sand as well. Oh, and by the way, you pay all your own expenses. Unless you're Tom Clancy or Stephen King, you pay 100% of your own expenses to get there. So the key.
It's silly.
I want to be sure to emphasize one point, and that's this. Is before I ever wrote my first book, and I've written 52 books. They've all been published by major publishers. I've been published by 75 publishers worldwide. I've sold 10 million copies in 41 languages in 60 countries. So I know a little bit about it. But one of the first things I did, which changed my life, is I went down to the bookstore, and I began to buy and read books on how to write a book. And then that tells you exactly, step by step, how to write a book. And today we're trying to tell people how to publish a book. And then what I did is I put together a program called How to Write a Book. And that program has been used by thousands of people. It just literally takes them from dreaming about writing to published book. Because I took everything I learned in years of study plus practice, and I put it into a step-by-step 20-part process. You take step one, you go right through it, starting with the concept, then the down-dump, and so on. At the other end, you've got a book. And it saves you months, years of hard work and struggle and confusion and everything else.
Genius.
What would you say about that?
Well, I think it's important that people know that you know, there's so many resources on how to do this. And I think, you know, a couple of things. One, from our previous conversation about the media and the book tour, I thought that was so funny because I went through the same thing with Life's Golden Ticket. And then with Millionaire Messenger, which came out in March of 2011, I never, ever, ever did an interview on the book. Ever. I mean, the book hit number one on the New York Times. I was never interviewed about the book when it hit number one. By the time it hit number one, the only thing I'd ever done is I released three really valuable videos out into the marketplace. I got everybody I knew to say, hey, could you send your people and watch these videos? They'll love the videos. They'll buy the book. And that was it. There was no radio. There was no television. There was no nothing. Today, in a lot of ways, if you actually look at conversions and sales of books, this isn't to say it's not about branding, but at a level of selling actual direct marketing tactic of do I sell a book or not? Is there a conversion or not? That media is a very ego-driven thing. You go on media because you want to feel important. You want to feel amazing. But in terms of actual sales, the way to do that, and what's not ego-driven, is by adding value and content online. And that's not ego. Now you're in the mode of serving and contributing by putting out great information. And that's the number one thing people need to take away of if you're asking, how do I promote my book today? It's exactly what Brian said. You put valuable content out there that adds to people's lives that they want to share with their fans and friends and families. And as they share that, the message of your book amplifies and the sales amplify. And the journey of, you know, spending multiple days to do a tour of bookstores or of media, that same amount of time, if you did what you are, which is a writer, and you wrote valuable blog posts, and you wrote valuable posts on Twitter and Facebook, you created valuable videos teaching and giving content, that same effort will always be shared more. Because the other thing about media is, you know, on today's show, people watch it that day, they never see it again.
Right.
But a successful blog post, people see it over and over and over and over and over and over again, and it's shared hundreds and hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of times. It's the grand amplifier. The viralocity comes from online. And I, if anyone takes anything away, focus your efforts on the online stuff and do what Brian said, which is add value to people's lives.
So let me summarize what you said, because it's probably the most important part of this conversation. To take your book from unknown to bestseller, you did video blog posts that your friends sent out to various people with real valuable information and ideas in the book. And if you want more, get the whole book?
Mm-hmm. I took, for example, I took one of the chapters out of the book, and I did a YouTube video on it.
Right.
And I just tried to get that out there as many people as I could. I sat down, and I sat at a table, and I clearly explained the value of the book, the promise of the book. And I made it so apparent that this book would impact and change their lives, they'd be crazy not to order it. And they could, in today's technology, it's so easy. All they had to do is click the button right next to my face and go to Amazon and buy the book.
How long was your YouTube show?
That video was, you know, less than 15 minutes.
That's great. Well, you know,
as we come to the
end here, I just want to wrap up with something that I've learned from you and you've learned from me and we've learned from everybody, and it's our philosophy, give to get, give to get, give to get, is the more you give, the more you get back. So start off with not what you can get, but what you can give.
Mm.
What you can give in ideas, what you can give in help, what you can give in bullet points. I have a friend just came up with an idea, and he just said, he just calls it, you know, 10 ways to. Colon, you know, 10 ways to lose weight, 10 ways to manage your time better, 10 ways to have more energy, 10 ways to communicate more effectively with your children, 10 ways. He just came up with that, and he said, well, anybody could come up with 10 ways and put your name on it, and for more, come and read my book, visit my site, listen to my programs. You could have 7 ways, 7 steps,
yeah, right.
7 guidelines, but it's always give to get, give to get, give to get.
I love that. And I think, you know, my sort of final thoughts on the topic is that what ends up in our industry is a lot of people, they want to write a book, as you said, you know, 82% of Americans want to write a book.
Yes.
And, or probably 82% of people worldwide, actually, when they want to think about sharing their message. And so what they do, they go read a bunch of books on how to write a book. They go to a bunch of seminars on how to write a book. They go to a bunch of seminars on how to publish a book, a bunch of seminars, or buy a bunch of tapes and audios and books on ebooks on how to write a book, how to publish a book, how to promote a book, how to market a book, how to build a brand, how to build a website, how to do all these things. And they spend years in that churn. And what has made, I think, you and I, if I have to think about what made us successful, I mean, at the critical core as authors, what actually made us successful, it's that we wrote the book. It's like they do all these things to learn all about the ecosystem of the author world, but they never write the dang book.
So
I think you've written all these books, and I'm only on number 4, but I'm working at it. And, you know, as we write these books, the success comes from doing it. Don't just learn this and hear us talk about this. Go out there and write a real book. Get it out there. Get it out of your mind, onto the page, into the computer, into publisher, on ebook, but the act of finishing, completing it, is actually where the journey begins.
Exactly. Well, we have to wrap up at this point, but as my friend Bud Gardner, the writing teacher, said, just write. You can't get worse at it by doing it. Just write. Just sit down and start writing. Just sit down and start writing. Allocate some time. Just get there and get that darn thing on paper. That's probably the best advice we could leave them with, wouldn't it be, Brendan?
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian. That was amazing.
Thank you, Brendan. We'll talk to you.
Sure.
We'll talk to our friends again in our next interview.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Brendan. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Talk to you soon.